is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We're going to go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers.
We are going to follow you. Gotcha, you lead us, gotcha, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
I'm probably wrong. I am wrong on a hell of a lot of things.
And Adam Nathan.
And I think if that's the philosophy you have going into every game, more often than not, if you score more points, you'll win.
Go Hawks.
Welcome to another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast. This week, as the calendar for 2019 begins to edge ever closer to 2020, we will go through everything that happened on Sunday night in Seattle against the Cardinals and look ahead to the Week 17 AFC West showdown and the return of a certain player as well. Someone who is always about that action is my co-host, as always, Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I'm good. I mean, they thought that maybe we wouldn't, you know, have a chance to spin this week. But, you know, Christmas is about great duos. You've got Gavin and Stacey, you've got Ali and Kane, and now you've got Court and Nathan. And what more could you possibly want to see you through the dark nights of the festive period?
Yeah, so who's Uncle Bryn in this? Who's the Uncle Bryn of
that? That is a good question. Well, I guess I did the cooking over Christmas, so I guess I'd probably be me as well.
it might be Sean.
Yeah, it could be Sean Wilson.
Anyway, so last week, week 16, the Seahawks return home, and we said last week it was a bit of a, it's going to be an awkward evening, but we possibly underestimated the awkward levels it could reach. I don't know, the Seahawks lost 27-13. To Kyler Murray, Brett Hundley, and the Arizona Cardinals.
I mean, I kind of almost saw it going that way, but I just didn't really have the guts to say on air that, like, you know, I thought we might, you know, lose just because we were going to be outmatched on talent, scheme, and the works. But it was a bit of a beatdown, to be honest. I mean, they won 27-6 after the first drive of the game. I mean, they hammered us, to be honest. And yeah. I know that people, you know, saying, oh, you know, the only game that matters is San Francisco, but, you know, we can't really get a bye now because we lost that game. And that could be as significant as anything going into the January tournament.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't actually heard it from Pete Carroll since Sunday, but he often just says, if you get a division first and then everything else will fall into place. But yeah, I think this team kind of needs any little advantage they can get. I mean, obviously they've lost more at home this year than they have on the road, but this team, this whole like setup, this whole program, as Pete Carroll puts it, is kind of been based around that HFA, isn't it? And it's, unless Mitchell Trubisky turns into what Mitchell Trubisky was supposed to be when he was the second or third overall pick a couple of years ago, it's going to be one home game, and then pack your bags and you're back on the Delta plane with no Wi-Fi, Adam.
Yeah, which is going to be not really ideal. I mean, I'm not convinced that this team is set up to win three games back to back to get through the playoffs. And I kind of feel it's just taken a lot of the shine off Sunday night's game for me, to be honest, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, I mean, NBC definitely may have had a buyer's remorse, whatever, after what happened on Sunday night. But on Sunday night, though, Adam, Kenyon Drake obviously had the longest touchdown run in Cardinals history. He had 166 yards on 24 carries. And we made Kenyon Drake look like Emmitt Smith reincarnated on Sunday. It was, I mean, yeah, there was players missing from every level of defense, but yeah, I mean, he just clipped off yards like it was Lamar Jackson, didn't he?
Yeah, it was pretty unideal. I mean, I saw a tweet yesterday about, I think the Seahawks are tracking to have their worst run defense since 2006, which is bad in its own right. But when you then look at the stats that, like, I think we're playing almost twice as much base defense as the Cardinals, who are playing the second most base defense. Like, ultimately, that means you've got seven big guys on the field instead of six. So the run should be the first thing that you can take care of. So, yeah, I don't know what's happening there. And, I mean, playing the 49ers is about as bad a matchup as you could possibly want, especially with Kingsbury laying out the blueprint about how to take us to town on it. Because, I mean, they really whipped us with any kind of motion and action and movement. It was like watching, what's the analogy? When you get like teams playing the same sport, but from two different kind of classifications almost. They just look like leagues ahead of us, strangely.
So it's like the England cricket bowling attack and the England cricket batting attack.
Pretty much, yeah, one playing against the other. That would be a fine way to put it.
it was just everything seemed kind of flat. But also, you talk about motion, we've seen that. I mean, obviously Lamar did it ridiculous success 2 months ago. The Rams did it down in LA, and the Cardinals did exactly the same as well. It's just like, at a certain point you'd expect they're gonna learn how to defend against it, but they don't seem to be changing their ways to defend against it, or is it more of a case that they don't have the talent to defend against it, Adam?
Well, we got into a couple of Twitter discussions with people about that on Sunday night after the game, and I think people were being pretty harsh on Pete Carroll for, you know, saying that he was outmatched schematically and whatever. I mean, they were in all those things, but ultimately, like, we didn't have any good players, really. Like, yeah, you can say whatever you want, but all of the players that you'd be banking on to do well, especially on the defensive side of the ball, like, they just weren't there, or they were hurt. And, you know, you can talk about scheme all you want, but there's a reason why half of these players that were playing on Sunday were picked up off the practice squad or in free agency, you know, when no one else wanted them, because that is the level that they are. I think I said to you, in a tweet, you know, after about, I think Jacob Hollister, they threw him a swing pass on like third and one, and he didn't make it. And it's just, you know, Hollister's been great, but they've extracted so much out of Hollister, and he's now the third and one guy that, you know, that's where we're at right now. So really, what can you expect against a team that is just rolling, which they were?
Yeah, I mean, they barely skipped the beat. I mean, obviously, Kyler Murray went down. Was it hamstring injury he went down with?
Yeah, but people are saying, Brett Hundley beat the Seahawks. I think they'd already scored more than 13 points by that stage, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm pretty certain it was 2010.
Yeah, I think it was. They'd got at least two touchdowns by then. So
yeah.
So yeah, I mean, he was amazing, by the way. We'll come on to him in a second.
But there's no drop off from a guy who's the number one overall pick to a guy who has flitted around three or four teams, including the Seahawks, and they give up obviously a seventh round pick from last year, and then just let him walk down to Arizona in the off season. But yeah, it was just like, I mean, Hollister. Well, Travis Homer led the team in targets and receptions, but the next guy is Jacob Hollister. But that kind of points to one of the other things which went horrendously wrong on Sunday. And I mean, that's the five guys up front completely combusted against what Chandler Jones is incredibly underrated league-wide, one of the best pass rushers in the league. But they made everyone on that defensive line and pass rushing unit and the Cardinals look like Pro Bowl, Pro level, didn't they?
They certainly did. But if there is one kind of schematic thing that I would say the Seahawks could do better at, there were so many times when Murray just had the ball out of his hands almost like before he'd even got the snap. It looked like it was just so quick, just snap pass. We didn't redo any of that. And I'm not sure if that's a Wilson thing or a Schottenheimer thing or just not the way Carroll wants to do it. But it's something that I've bemoaned for a long time in this podcast. Like, they don't have the 5-6 yard pickup quick pass play. They never seem to have done it for some reason. And if you are going to try and alleviate the mismatch of Chandler Jones against Jamarco Jones, which was, you know, unfortunately for the lad Jamarco, like, not the prettiest, you know, you need some of that, and we just didn't seem to have any of it.
Yeah, it always just seemed to happen with Chandler Jones. Second time he plays the Seahawks, it's just an absolute name on a play sheet, not an actual I mean, a couple of years ago it was Bradley Soule, wasn't it? Soule, whatever. He's now a tight end. I mean, that kind of just explains how he's had. But yeah, I mean, it just every aspect of the game on Sunday fared
shy,
suboptimally. I'll put it friendly. But yeah, on the reaction of everyone, it kind of obviously something we'll get onto in a bit distracted everyone quite swiftly. But yeah, it's like there's a constant, yes, to see. I mean, this team is not it needs Snookers to have any say at the back end of January, doesn't it? But the fact that they could win the amount of games they've won. I mean, you watch other teams around the league, and you watch how their fan bases react to what the product that they have to watch, and it's just there is a spoilt brat nature at every corner, every turn to certain aspects, and that kind of was shown in full swing on Sunday night, Adam.
Yeah, like let's say like. For hypothetical reasons, the Seahawks won the Super Bowl this year. You would say, without any shadow of a doubt, they would be the worst Super Bowl winners of the last 10 years, like from a quality perspective, if not longer. I mean,
yeah, I'm not sure. I think the Broncos are equally off colour. I mean, there maybe, is a lot of similarities.
But they had like a legendary defense.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. But yeah, there is offensively the output is quite similar and quite But now maybe I mean the Ravens weren't great when they won the Super Bowl. I mean they got there on a miracle play misread by the Broncos safety and stuff. But yeah, there would be the biggest thing if this team got to the Super Bowl is the difference from that 2013-14 team to this team, and they've reached the same goal, which again points to the qualities of people at the top of the organization. But yeah, it's just, I mean, yeah, it's not going to happen. Yeah,
I mean, that's kind of what I mean. So like what people need to temper their expectations of what this team is physically going to be capable of, because, you know, they're not like a world-class team that we have seen in the past.
Yeah, no, not even close. There's really, it kind of proves that we're having this conversation in week 17. And it's kind of like we're still unsure what this team is going to put out and look like and how they're going to go about their business on Sunday, when most of the other teams in the playoffs in both conferences, you can kind of say this is how they win, this is what's going to come short. But this Seahawks team, you can't say that they're going to win because they can do this, or they're going to lose because... yeah, they're going to do this, they're going to do that. Like the Bills, you know, defense is going to make stuff awkward. It's just if the running game and the quarterback can improve his accuracy and get the ball to minute playmakers, isn't it? But like, the Seahawks don't have that clarity in what they can do they?
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're exactly right. And as we've said a number of times, that they've milked this quality of the roster out as best as they can, and as a result, like, they're just going to have games like the Cardinals, and you know they're going to have to be absolutely perfect to get into the late January games. But if they did that, it would be an unbelievable achievement. So I just can't get that torn up about the losses, because I expected them to lose so many more games than they have done this year.
Yeah, but also a lot. Exactly. But also at the same point, it's not. Like we did a podcast a few years ago when they went to the Falcons in the divisional, was it? They went to the Falcons.
Yeah, they beat the Lions the week before with that Paul Richardson catch.
Then they went to the Falcons. That kind of, okay, this is going to be like 15, 16 point loss and the season's over kind of thing. But like the playoffs for the Seahawks could roll out in a way where it's like every game they're going to go, yeah, they could win this. But there's only really one game where one place they can go to, we can say, yeah, they haven't got hope in hell here. Mm-hmm. And that's probably New Orleans. But all the other places, one, they've got recency of being successful in those places. But also, like, there's not to the extent, but there are question marks over there's question marks over the 49ers because their pass defense is just crumbled. The Packers, Aaron Rodgers isn't Aaron Rodgers or what he was 3 or 4 years ago. The NFC East is a mess. And the Vikings, we seem to have their kind of number, collective number, and they were incredibly bad on Monday Night Football. But so there is always, but the only one of the six NFC teams which you can see the Seahawks having next to no hope in is in that building down in the New Orleans, isn't it?
Which I don't think you would have to play in if the Saints, sorry, if the Niners win on Sunday and the Packers win, then the Niners and Packers go to 1-2 as the seeds for the NFC. I think there's nothing the Saints can do about that. So yeah. You could get to a stage where as a Seahawks, you play at the Eagles. And then at the Niners in their first ever like really big game at Candlestick, and you might be a bit healthier. And then maybe you may have to go to the Packers or the Saints in the championship round. So you're right. I don't think any of those games are implausible to win. And yeah, I think you're right. I'd probably rather go to the Niners than I would go to the Saints in a divisional round for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, because there is that kind of this team and these players on this team, you know, they can win down there. Obviously, they had a bit of luck with the kicker situation down there, but also Myers did miss one as well. But there's absolutely nothing with New Orleans. I think, Wagner, KJ, and Wilson are probably the only Seahawks who've played in that building.
Well, there is one more who we'll come on to in a bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, there is that one as well. But another thing with this is that we're having this conversation that it's going to be feasible that the Seahawks could Dalboy fall through the bar their way into the Super Bowl, Adam, which is another thing which you kind of there's only 12 teams going to be having these conversations over the next couple of weeks. And again, the Seahawks, for all their failings and whatnot, are in that conversation again. Like the reactions of some are just wild and a bit unnecessary, aren't they?
Yeah, 100. I think that's exactly it. It's just people are, and we've done it in the past. That probably overly negative about the Seahawks. You know, sometimes you kind of are just waiting for them to lose so you can have some of your priors confirmed. But I think people doing it this year is just a bit crazy.
Yeah. I agree. Anyone to come out with any sort of praise?
No.
From Sunday night?
Absolutely not. They were all fucking garbage, mate, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, I tell you what, I'll praise Travis Homer. I'll praise Travis Homer for not fumbling. And as a rookie on his debut in that, he wasn't a massive negative. So I think that's fair play for kind of his draft stock is his fourth choice running back the roster. Like, he didn't kill us, and that's probably fair play to him for that.
Yeah, but like everyone said, I didn't know much of Homer coming into the league, but everyone said, they said once they drafted him on the third day of the draft, that he's going to be a pass guy out of the backfield, special teams dude. And like, he got six catches on Sunday, but weirdly he rushed five times, 16 yards at him, and his longest was 17 yards. So how's that possible?
I don't even know. My usually
my
mind.
But he did what was kind of like on the tin, didn't he? But obviously the scoreboard maybe got away, so we didn't have the opportunities that the Carsons and Pennies and Processes would have had if the scoreboard had been any which way of being closer than it was when Homer got the opportunities due to what happened with Carson and CJ Processes. For him again, Adam. Moving on, before we go on to the 49ers, obviously, while all the negativity was swirling around and the negativity cups were overflowing, John Schneider, Pete Carroll, and the team swiftly moved to put a positive spin on everything and set the world ablaze as this man returned to the Seahawks.
Crowd silent now, as opposed to when the Saints have the ball.
Goes in motion right to left. Turn and handle into it.
Oh, look at this one.
Finds a little bit of a hole. Keeps his legs moving. He's across the 40. Midfield. 45. He's on the run, Lynch.
What a run. Marshawn Lynch.
Still on his feet. Man, 35. Look at him go. He's down to 20. 15. He could go. He is going to go.
Has blockers now. He's dancing his way for the touchdown.
Touchdown, Seahawks! Oh, my word!
Good an effort as I've ever seen in my life from a running back who they traded for from Buffalo. Downhill, physical.
A 67-yard run! Marshawn Lynch, unbelievable! He must have knocked five guys down on the way to the end zone. The beast is alive and well.
He breaks the tackle of Shanley, runs through Sharper, runs through Adell, runs through Jabari Greer. Get off me, he says to Tracy Ford. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I love Robert Turbin is a Seahawk once again. How about that, eh?
It's our whole point of this season was to have some more fun watching our team than we've had in the last couple. And what could be more fun than this coming into town?
It's ridiculous. I mean, Marshawn Lynch, I like, yeah, but I cannot think of like an equivalent thing happening where like the
someone
hype
said it was like when
so...
Thierry Henry went back to Arsenal. I think that was quite a good one.
Yeah, that's like that's what I mean. Like personally, I can't think of like an equivalent move happening. I mean, he's 4 years. He retired basically after the London game against the Seahawks 15 months ago. Hasn't played a down in the NFL since. We've seen lighting joints off the torch at the Coliseum and everything else in Oakland. Seemed to be completely all about helping out and supporting the town down there in Oakland. And then was it 2 weeks ago? I think he literally just visited the receptionist and a couple of, like, chefs and then left, which the team has to then declare as a visit because he was technically still an active NFL player. Then it's Bob Condotta's tweet late on Sunday night saying, expect the Seahawks to look at CJ Anderson. Oh, and don't rule out Marshawn Lynch. And that was it, wasn't it? Like a couple of days later, he was signed and then he's back doing his 5 second interviews. I mean, he's like we've spoke about. We may not have done a podcast with him as Seahawk, Adam.
God, that's a great question. I'm not sure we have.
No, but like we've said numerous times over 100 odd episodes that he's like he altered everything about what the like the path of this franchise, and it all starts back with that first beast week against the Saints in 2010. But like this, I mean, like, if anyone is going to juice this fan base after a sea of negativity, it was going to be this man. But we probably possibly didn't expect in this way. And for these reasons, obviously, with Chris Carson fracturing his hip, CJ Prosize broke his arm, Rashad Penny, obviously, a couple weeks ago, tore his knee. So he is, looks like he's going to get a good chunk of play on Sunday. And I mean, the tickets for the game on Sunday in Seattle are going ridiculously heightened prices, but oh man, imagine being there on Sunday night.
It would be amazing. I mean, the thing about this is, you know, as you say, it's week 17, so you can't trade for anyone.
No.
So you're hamstrung by who's on the waivers. And I think two of the last three guys that have been taken off waivers are like Sam J. Perrin, the ex-Redskin, and is it Rod Harris, who used to play for us and then Dallas?
Oh, yeah. Rod Smith.
Rod Harris. Rod Smith. So, like, you may as well take a punt on Lynch if that's the pool that you're fishing in of talent. Do you know what I mean? Because at least Lynch might give you something. The other two would be, you know, like the Turbin thing is quite funny. I mean, that's just completely ridiculous. I mean, that's obviously a jobs for the boys kind of situation there. But, you know, whatever. I mean, I would have taken CJ Anderson in a heartbeat over Robert Turbin.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're just comparing apples to apples as opposed to apples to Russell Wilson's best mate. But yeah, it's just great fun. And in a weird way, I kind of wouldn't be using him that much on Sunday, but that's something we can go on to later. I'd much rather have him healthy for the playoffs when it's going to like really matter. But let's see. I just can't wait to see it.
Oh yeah, no. Like, if I hope NBC or Sky or whoever controls that, I think it's NBC controls it on Sky, but they have to show him being introduced because it's the defense's turn on Sunday. It does sound like he will be a part of the defensive intros, which is probably fitting for Marshawn Lynch. But I think the biggest thing for him and the Seahawks, this team on Sunday, is how much he's going to juice that crowd, which with a team which is possibly in the drain a little bit after what's happened over the last month, really, is they kind of need that lift so close to kickoff, because that place is going to become unglued when Marshall Lynch trots out of that tunnel, isn't he? Like, it kind of what that impact of that, although it can be argued, is going to be more than possibly what he's, like you said, what he's actually going to do with ball in hand on Sunday, isn't it?
Yeah, and let's be honest, I would say that you would be hard pushed to suggest that the Niners are not currently the better of the two teams on paper.
Yeah.
And one of the main things you're hoping for is that Jimmy G shits himself, to be honest. And a juiced crowd is going to be a fine way to make that happen.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's only been one 49ers quarterback really come into Seattle over the last 5-6 years over this Pete Carroll era, really, that's dealt with all that, and that is Mr. Kaepernick. I mean, it was exactly the same 5 years ago in the championship game, and was it, they were 10-0 up in a blink of an eye. Obviously, that ridiculous pass when he was just in midair to the back of the end zone over Thomas Anquan Boldin. And he's the only real 49ers quarterback who's come in and dealt with all the carnage and chaos that is a night game at CenturyLink, isn't he? But so Garoppolo's got a big enough task as it is. I mean, it's the second time with Pete Carroll we've had a home game in week 17 for the NFC West. This one's just a bit different and a bit, it's up a couple of tiers of quality, even with all the questions around this team, Adam.
Yeah, it's as I say, it's lost a little bit of its luster, and it could lose a lot of it, given that we may know that we are not going to be able to get a bye regardless of what happens after Sunday afternoon and evening's games. But, you know, winning the division is never something to sniff at. The option to have a home game, I suppose, is always going to be better than not, although I'm not entirely sure where I stand on that yet. I'm still trying to work it out in my own mind. But it'll be great, and it'll, you know, at least it's Marshawn Lynch is certainly worth staying up to 5:30 in the morning for to watch him run.
God, I forgot about that part of it. But yeah, offensively though, this defense for the 49ers has subsided. I mean, obviously, Richard Sherman's missed a couple of games. I don't think he played much against the Rams last week. Definitely not every snap. And Jakuski Tartt, who was a really good player coming out of Samford a few years ago, he's been like the linchpin of that defense at the back end of safety. He appears to be highly questionable, and two of their better run defenders in the middle after in their rotation also look to be out. But their defense has as many question marks coming into this game as ours does, doesn't it? And also equal levels of health, it appears.
Yeah, look, they're coming off the back of a unconvincing win loss against the Falcons, where, you know, they weren't great at all. The Rams game, where they kind of rallied and did pretty well, but they weren't, you know, the barnstorms that they have been in the past. So we're not up against the super team that, you know, are going to blow past anyone that comes anywhere near to them. So it'll be good to watch, and it'll be a good test of kind of what playoff football feels like, going into January.
Yeah, it will. But for the offense to click, obviously a lot of it comes down to Russell Wilson. I mean, it does seem with all the stuff on Marshall Lynch that Travis Homer is probably going to get the start, for what little that means at running back. And you'd hope he's got his sea legs under him now after last week. So this is his first real claim to show what he's got and show his mettle, kind of what will the focus and attention on the two new guys in that running back room, Adam.
Yeah, man, I'm not sure he's like a power runner that is the archetypal back that the Seahawks are looking for. But, you know, hopefully you can get enough out of him that, you know, again, it doesn't hurt you again. That's all you can ask. Just don't hurt us.
Yeah. Defensively, this is going to be a pretty gnarly test, isn't it? The running game seems to have a different guy break 100 yards every week. Raheem Mostert seems to be the flavor of the month at the minute. Matt Breida had a pretty strong opening salvo to the season. Tevin Coleman is highly paid for a reason. And after what happened, what Kenyon Drake and Kyler Murray did to this run defense last week, obviously it looks like Javon Clowney is going to be back which is obviously a massive plus, especially in the run game, more than anything else, what he did to this team 6 weeks ago. It's that should be the focal point of the defensive game plan. And then you got to ask for Jimmy Garoppolo to win the big one all by himself off his own back kind of thing, haven't you?
Yeah, I think in an ideal world, you make it that Garoppolo is the guy that has to beat you. I actually think he's a lot better than people give him credit for, but that I'm kind of going on what I think versus what I've, you know, properly seen. So, you know, if someone said to me today that the game is won or lost by the performance of Jimmy G, I would absolutely take that given how much I fear what they could do to us in the run game.
Yeah, but as I say, it does appear that Javon Clowney is back. And if we talked about positive memories of playing against a team, Clowney's got probably the most positive ones of all players that play against the 49ers this year. Adam, he won that game for almost for the Seahawks 6-7 weeks ago on Monday Night Football, didn't he?
Seems a long time ago, just, you know, how much changes in football over the weeks and whatever, but that was as good a performance as we've ever seen from a Seahawks defensive player over the course of 60 minutes. And, you know, we shouldn't forget that because it was just stunning what he did.
Yeah, it was worth the price of trade and the, it was incredible. And you'd hope, although it probably would be a bit foolhardy to expect him come off a few week absence with the injury he's playing through as well to expect the same, but Clowney probably is one person who could match what he did down there in Santa Clara. Anything else defensively you want to see for this Seahawks team on Sunday night?
They've not really won us a home game yet, I don't think.
No. I was trying to think like earlier, like if the defense have actually made a play in any of these 11 wins or whatever they've got. I couldn't really think of one. It's kind of just...
Yeah, you've had two Clowney touchdowns that have been significant in both of those games. But yeah, there's not been like the... There's nothing that like Minka Fitzpatrick has coughed up for the Steelers that like, you could compare to what's happened over here, I guess, could you?
No, not at all. Yeah, it would be a good time to get that confidence one to watch to the either side and prediction, Adam, for Sunday.
My old mate DK Metcalf, who I just cannot work out as a player at all. I mean, who we're talking about as offensive rookie of the year, and I guess look by the numbers, you can kind of understand why that buzz is coming. But you know, he has games like Sunday where he just, you know, one target and a drop. Pacifier mouth guard like looks really dumb when he has a bad game. I want to see something from him. I need some dominance from him again, because you know, he's a crucial part of the offense, which probably isn't right to need so much of a rookie, but you know, we need him firing him and Lockett if we're gonna, you know, do something. So I want to see something from him on offense. And defensively, let's see Bobby Wagner come back to kind of the Bobby Wagner that we know and love, because it's not really been there the last 6 weeks, let's be honest.
No, he's getting picked on somewhat. I mean, he's still amassing tackle after tackle after tackle. I think he's second or third in the league on tackles. But yeah, he hasn't had, apart from that interception, Caroline, he hasn't had the signature play, and he hasn't, obviously, last year was just a ridiculous level from him anyway. But yeah, I think he's on a bit of an island, I think, at times, and it's being targeted by opposing offensive coordinators. For me, I think Metcalf probably, but I just kind of want to see how the running back three shakes out. I want to kind of see one who plays left tackle and how they do against this heralded 49ers pass rush. Obviously, Bosa, Armstead, and Buckner, and Dee Ford as well, all the rest of it. It's a gnarly test after what happened last Sunday, so... I mean, it possibly could only get better, but let's wait and see. Although I'm not that confident that the Seahawks are going to win on Sunday, I think there's too many questions, but stranger things have happened. I think it'll just mean that we'll be back in Philadelphia next week, because, I mean, they've not got an easy game against the Giants, so the Cowboys could still sneak in, but that team looks completely lost and directionless, more than most teams in the playoff and ever, really, don't they, the Cowboys? But yeah, I think the Niners will win. I think they'll probably win by at least one score, maybe even two, Adam.
Yeah, I've got the Niners down like 31-21.
I'm trying not to be overly negative about it, but that's just the way I see it, unfortunately.
Yeah, and then it's off to Philly or off to Dallas?
Off to Philly. Off to Philly. Yeah. I think they'll get it done. It wouldn't stun me at all if both teams lost, which would kind of sum up that absolute shit show of a division, to be honest.
No, because I'm not sure if he's playing on Sunday, but Dwayne Haskins has shown signs of life last month or so, and you've got Terry McLaurin, who possibly could be a severe dark horse for offensive rookie of the year, because that kid just looks like he has it. But yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all. That would be quite fitting and funny. But also, you talked about DK Metcalf being in the O Rookie of the Year, and I think Miles Sanders should be, because the main reason the Eagles are in that is because with Jordan Howard's injury, he has stepped up hugely, although him falling down the 22-yard line in my fantasy matchup to Jordan Clark on Sunday was so very annoying, Adam. But yeah, although I'd still lost by like a mile, but I could have done with those extra 9 points. But then moving on.
Defensive Rookie of the Year awards, and personally, I'd give it to Kyler Murray, because I think the playing quarterback is so much more difficult than being like a Josh Jacobs running back. I mean, AJ Brown, if you're going to give it to a receiver, is probably the guy, him or Terry McLaurin, however you pronounce it. McLaurin, that's the one. It's Kyler for me would get it, I think.
I think Josh Jacobs would get it. I think drafts, yeah. I agree. I think Kyler should, because I think what we saw at Sunday, what he's done recently. For me, it'll be Kyler, Miles, and then Josh Jacobs, because the Raiders team has just been a weird one this year, even weirder for that team as well. Defensive Rookie of the Year, then, who would you give that to, Adam?
Defensive Rookie of the Year has got to be Nick Bosa, unfortunately, hasn't it?
Probably. I can't really think. I mean, Josh Allen down at the Jags had a pretty nice season.
Yeah, I mean, LJ Collier is probably in the mix. that took you much longer to get than I was expecting.
There is someone on Twitter who we both interact with from time to time. Matty Brown posted yesterday different things for the Seahawks in 2019. Do you want to run through those quickly, see what you think?
Yeah, let's do it.
He put team MVP, offensive player, defensive player, rookie of the year, big breakout, disappointment, and underrated. So the team MVP for 2019 for you, Adam, is who?
Russell Wilson by a comfortable margin.
I saw a quote tweet. I can't remember who it was from, but someone put Schneider, which, I mean,
I saw that. Obviously, but, I mean,
yeah. OPOY, Adam.
Offensive player of the year. I never like giving it to the same player twice. I mean, it obviously is Wilson, but let's go. I think Chris Carson, you'd have to say, has been, you know, Lockett had a few weeks with the injuries. If Lockett had played at his best for 17 games, 16 games, then it would have been him. But I think over the course of the whole year, even with the fumble issues, I'd just about give it to Carson, I think.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Lockett is in the midst of a 1,000-yard season, so it is quite weird to him not to be possibly in the upper echelons. It's going to, but yeah, it's Carson, despite all these fumbling issues in the first 3 weeks, is kind of, he's carried this team. I mean, Russell Wilson's not been lights out for probably since before the Niners game, the previous one, really. Mm-hmm. I think Carson's kind of carried the team to a couple of wins as well. So yeah, I think Carson would be Defensive player of the year. Defensive player of the year, Adam?
Defensive. I saw someone say Quandre Diggs, which I thought was a little bit optimistic. Clowney is probably one that you could go with. I feel like one of Quinton Jefferson and Puna Ford, like, they probably don't deserve the award, but they shouldn't be sniffed on in the discussion. It's hard. I'm going to go Shaq Griffin, actually.
Yeah, and me. I think that's who I'll go to. I think he's as close, damn it, as locked down that side of the field. I mean, he hasn't got interception in 2019, but I think he's been the most consistent defensive player of everyone on that back end. I mean, Clowney's had a few plays, had a few games, but Yeah, I think that's a couple of things. Consistently, Shaquille Griffin has been, he's been, he really should be in the Pro Bowl, I think. Mr. Shaq, Team Rookie of the Year, Adam?
Team Rookie of the Year. I feel like I'm going to miss one, miss a stupid one. I guess you have to say DK Metcalf, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really think of anyone else who's made
it. He came in with a lot of doubters, and even though, in a way, he only has been frustrating because we've seen what he can do.
Yeah.
As opposed to frustrating because we're not seeing anything. So, yeah, I think I'm going to go with DK.
This is boring. Yeah, I'm going to DK. Breakout player of the year, Adam.
Breakout. I think I know who you're going to say, so I'm going to try and avoid that. who's been the breakout player of the year? Oh, this is a tricky. I think I'll go Rashad Penny just for that two or three game stretch. Yeah. And I think if he makes his way back healthy into the start of next season, then you've got a real player in your hands. So I'll say him because I think you're going to go for Trey Flowers.
Yeah, I think he's. Yeah, next year, I can't wait for next year to watch them two, the back end. Him and Shaq are going to be ridiculously fun to watch, touch wood and all that with health. But yeah, Trey Flowers, the work, yeah, he's brilliant. He might be top five of my favourite players to watch on the Seahawks team.
Interesting.
I don't know if that's a hot take, but yeah.
No, I'll allow it.
No. What else? Biggest disappointment on the 2019 season for these Seahawks, Adam?
Biggest disappointment. I mean, difficult to say that LJ Collier, you know, it's a first round draft pick, but let's not say him just, you know, because it's too easy. I'll go like the linebacker group in general.
Yeah.
It was a position that I thought was so stacked, and it's just. It's just done nothing for you, really, unfortunately. And when it includes your best player, that's a bit disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, the safety position pre-Quandre possibly could have a shout, but yeah, I think linebackers. I mean, they just the fact that we haven't seen more of Cody Barton than BBK is. I mean, especially Barton for being pretty high second round pick. Was he second round pick or third round pick? No, third round pick. Yeah. Being third round pick. It's pretty high draft stock, and he's kind of. I mean, Michael Kendricks has not played that well, but he just seems entrenched in that position. It's quite strange. I mean, it's almost the same with Ugo Amadi at nickel. I mean, obviously they're in base a lot more, as we keep saying, but he's shown signs, especially as being a gunner on the special teams, that he's got. He's no fool on that field, but he just didn't seem to get the opportunities. So I think, I think that linebacker group has been disappointed. Most underrated player on the 2019 season. We probably end up going to agree on this one, I think.
Jesus, is anyone underrated?
I think Poole Ford is underrated. I think he carried the load alongside our Woods for 6 weeks, minus Jaron Reed. And I think since Jaron Reed's come back, I think he's outperformed Jaron Reed as well.
Him as a disappointment, actually, Jaron Reed.
Yeah, he hasn't done much. He's got, what, two sacks?
He's certainly not pushed on from last year.
No, he hasn't. Yeah, I think Poole Ford is, if like, the ascension for him is similar to what the ascension could be for Trey Flowers. I think the fact that, as I say, he has outperformed Jaron Reed and how good Jaron Reed was is as glowing as you could be about an undrafted guy who was kind of, I mean, when Jaron Reed was suspended, it was like, what the hell are we going to do without him? And Puna just, is it the Puna Hive is the fan cult following that he has on social media? But yeah, that's only going to grow over the next year or so. Again, touch wood, if he gets good fortune with health, Adam. If anyone else listening wants to send in there, all those MVP and all that, do so on the post when we post this podcast up and let us know how boring we are for agreeing on pretty much every turn. Adam, do I have a spin in the bin?
Always. First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions
as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly is an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and Mike, and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
Yeah, this week's Get in the Bin, week 17. It's the end of is the seasons of giving, Adam. So let's put two more people in the trash can, shall we?
Please, I will allow you to start on this one whilst I just come up with one for myself.
Okay, I'm gonna put someone that I missed until you tagged me in a tweet. I'm gonna put the writers and segment producers on ESPN's morning show Get Up, because they have trampled all over our what's it called when you own something, our property via Dan Orlovsky, the former perennial backup quarterback in the NFL, who was on their TVs on Monday with a massive trash bag, Adam, and there was no mention of this here there fine podcast.
It was disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, they even had the trash emoji on the tweet. I think they had the trash emoji on the graphic, on the crawl on the screen. And yeah, there was no mention of this podcast. I mean, we've both been told by our friends over in Seattle, Mike Dugar and Jessamine, that this is a fun segment to have on a podcast and that we should keep it and we should keep doing it. And then the worldwide leader of sports goes and nicks it without any nod to its curators.
Intellectual properties, I think the term
you're
looking
for. That's the phrase I was looking for. That's the one, yeah.
And I mean, neither of us were necessarily intellectual or suggest we property moguls, but I think in this case, the bin is very much ours.
Yeah, I mean, it's the bin. I mean, we've got Americans calling it a bin, for one, not the trash can.
That's true.
That's one of the bigger accomplishments of this podcast. But yeah, Dan Orlovsky, but I think the segment producers on Get Up on Monday morning, whoever they are. Obviously, it's Christmas, so it might be, never know, maybe the backup staff on ESPN Get Up are one of the few listeners of this podcast. Who knows, but yeah. They can get in the bin. Adam?
This might be a little bit harsh, but I think, like, Kirk Cousins just, like, come on, mate. 10 points in the really big one at home. Like, it's not always your fault, Kirk, but this was the game where everyone's, like, the consensus, he has to do something in this one.
Yeah.
And he just goes and, like, bollocks up the biggest egg you could ever drop.
I mean, 10 points, the Packers fumbled, turned it over four times, two fumbles. They had the ball. They started with the ball in Green Bay territory at least twice in that. I think the first touchdown, the one touchdown drive come off that one. They got it to like the six and then eventually pushed it in. But yeah, it was not good. I mean, Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, I mean, he doesn't look healthy.
Not healthy, is he?
Stephon Diggs, they did the Philly special, as everyone does now, apart from the Seahawks. Yeah, they did that, and I think someone tweeted, Stephon Diggs just showed what it's like trying to catch passes from Kirk Cousins as he overthrew him by about 10 yards. So it's kind of, yeah, it was not pretty, and it's, yeah, it was very similar to watching the Seahawks, that Vikings team, bar the quarterback play, because that was garbage, really. Anyone else, Adam?
Anyone else? I can't think of any like pundits that have disgraced themselves. I mean, Booger and Tessitore again on Monday Night Football are just so bad. I officially have much more of an issue with Tessitore than Booger. Booger is just dumb and like just rubbish at his job. But Tessitore is so annoying. His phrases, it's like he's trying to impress like the kids used to go to school with. It's just aching trying to listen to him. And I can't do it.
But we have survived the year of Tess and Boog. You mean surely? Do they have a playoff game? Anyway, surely ESPN are going to put, like I said, it should be Adam Amin and it should be Matt Hasselbeck in that booth. Because get McAfee in there as well. That's really, really fun to listen to on Thursday Night College Ball this year. So
what is a good crew? I mean, he'd got Watson and Winston mixed up every now and again, but I mean, who really cares about that? But the Eisen, Burleson, and Joe Thomas crew is always good fun. I like listening to them, and they did the Saturday night game between the Bucks and the Texans, and they were good fun.
Yeah, I mean, Rich Eisen's arguably the pinnacle of doing sports broadcasting on this sport. But I missed that game as I was celebrating a Coventry City win at home in inverted commas. So I missed that one, and all I saw was Deshaun Watson let the side down for the first time all season as he got 9 points, and then my opponent had Lamar Jackson, who got 9,000 points, I think it was, against the Browns on Sunday evening. But it's so easy to get better. Just do it, ESPN. Just don't nick our segment ideas. I was going to put someone else in the bin, but I can't remember. Good week, bad week, Adam, for anyone?
Who's had a good week? I think Carson Wentz had a good week. I think he's kind of really stepped up against a lot of adversity. I think he's set a record since they used to track this thing. Like, he's the first quarterback with three consecutive games of 30 completions and no interceptions since records began. So that's pretty impressive. And I think he got a lot of flack, certainly around the time that we played them, that, you know, could he do it? Could he not do it or whatever? This may all come and blow up in his face on Sunday, but I think to have taken his team with so few kind of orthodox weapons into the playoffs as he has done or looks to have done in the last 3 weeks, I think that's pretty impressive. And it's amazing. I think it's his first ever Week 17 game that he's playing on Sunday.
It's pretty wild. But also the best stat I think I've seen all week is that Baker Mayfield on Sunday will become the first Cleveland Browns starting quarterback to start all 16 games in 18 years.
That is amazing.
I mean, that's what I think that's ever going to be topped. But yeah, I think again, like I said, Miles Sanders is a massive part of that. The job he's doing, the work he's doing for that team, he looks a special, special player for the Eagles. I think it's been a good week for. I think it's a good week for Josh Allen, because he didn't look out of place overall or anything like that in a pretty, it was the archetypal, it's going to be a big game, doubt the Patriots, they're going to blow out the AFC East, are going to crumble again, but they didn't really crumble. It was just kind of down to one or two plays here and there, and Josh Allen certainly appears to have made a pretty impressive and pretty encouraging positive step in his second year. So if they can, I mean, that team is only going to improve. I mean, Sean McDermott's a really good coach. He seems to have like that kind of like Pete Carroll thing of like getting a mantra and just that's how they build the team. This is how we're going to play, and everyone else can kind of try and stop us kind of thing. But yeah, their receivers are John Brown, Cole Beasley, and obviously got Devin Singletary at running back as well. They're a tiny team. If they get a legitimate like proper weapon giant at tight end or wide receiver, that could be a fun team to watch the next couple of years. So I think Josh Allen showed reasons to be cheery in New York State on Saturday evening. I think it's been a good week for him. Bad week for anyone, Adam in particular?
Bad week for Seahawk Twitter, but I think that's probably continuing their 100% every record week of that. I think that's about me done, actually, for good week, bad week.
I can't really think of anyone either again. Next week, I don't think anything with the playoff schedule has been announced. I expect it won't be the highlight game of the weekend if they do end up in the wild card game, which I think is likely a bit strange. Well, they are going to be playing on wild card weekend, but if they are hosting on the road for it, well, you it won't be the 10 a.m. start. Adam, you kind of hope that the schedules will give us a little bit of a later one, wouldn't you?
You would hope so, yeah. I mean, you would imagine whoever's going to be sixth seed of the AFC is going to have that first Saturday lunchtime game. But Devin let's Rogers. See. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Before we get to this podcast, you can, we do, as always, encourage you to do so on all the usual means and methods on Facebook, UK Seattle Seahawks fans, all the Possession podcasts. Podcast is on Podbean, iTunes, and Spotify. Until next time, enjoy the Seahawks game on Sunday Night Football on week 17. From both myself and Alan, we wish you a happy new year. Until next time out, this has been the Possession Podcast.
And the dog wishes you a go Hawks.
Yeah, timing.
What brought you back this time?
Happy holidays. Merry New Year. Y'all have a great day. It's a great feeling to be back. Thank you.